From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Matthew Smith. Should Florida expand its medical marijuana laws? That's the question going before voters this year under Amendment 2. While Florida already offers medical marijuana to some patients suffering from a limited list of afflictions, Amendment 2 would expand eligibility for the drug and require the state to regulate production and distribution of cannabis. Coming up, arguments from both sides about Amendment 2. Plus, could the upcoming election be rigged? Amid accusations of voter fraud and fixed elections, we'll look at Florida's voting system and how supervisors of elections safeguard your vote. We'll also hear what keeps potential voters from casting ballots and other anxieties on voters' minds as they head to the polls. But first, the news.
Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us.
If we win on November 8th, we are going to fix our rigged system. It's a rigged, broken, corrupt system. It's rigged. It's broken. It's corrupt.
That was Donald Trump at the rally at the Collier County Fairgrounds just 2 weeks ago, expressing the idea that's been repeated by some of his supporters in Florida and elsewhere in the country that the upcoming election is rigged. In an election defined by email hacking and leaks, claims of a rigged election are being taken seriously by some. But what goes into making Florida's elections secure? And before allegations of voter fraud, what can we make of a poll watchers and concerns of voter intimidation? Joining us now to talk about Florida's elections and security checks in place, we'll be joined by Jennifer Edwards, Collier County Supervisor of Elections, in just a few moments. Also with us on the phone today to talk about voter concerns leading up to Election Day is Betty Parker, political columnist with the Fort Myers News Press. You can read her coverage of state politics in her column Parker on Politics in Saturday editions of the paper. Good to speak with you again, Betty.
Hi, John. Thanks for asking me.
And joining us live in studio this afternoon is FGCU political science professor Dr. Roger Green. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
We're talking elections in Florida and asking election officials, is the vote rigged? Call in with your questions or concerns about Florida's elections and any questions you may have before Election Day, now less than a week away. Call 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also reach us online on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter, where at WGCU, using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Betty Parker, political reporter or columnist, rather, with the Fort Myers News Press, you know, you've been covering this election and systems here in Southwest Florida for years.
Yeah.
Are these allegations of a rigged system and voter fraud new?
They appear to have been amplified this year by Donald Trump. It's hard to imagine a system could be rigged in the way he's talking about, because we're talking about millions and millions of votes. But also, the corrupt system. Our legislators, it's predominantly Republican. Our governor, who's in charge, is a Republican. Our local election supervisors are all Republican. I think most in the state are Republican. Marco Rubio has said he doesn't believe the election is rigged. It's just such a sweeping thing to make a big deal out of.
And you know, the Orlando Sentinel, I saw this morning, you know, reported this week on the discovery of absentee ballots that had been stolen from five people in Seminole County and fraudulently turned in earlier this month. But a Florida Department of State spokesperson emphasized in that story that there's no indication of anything like that occurring on a broader scale. Dr. Green, looking back on previous elections in Florida and around the nation, do we know of any widespread election rigging or large-scale voter fraud?
No, I mean, you have to go back to a much earlier point in U.S. history to find this. So these sweeping allegations, which I understand the political intent behind them if you're Donald Trump, but in terms of any kind of factual basis, the what he's conveying, you know, kind of harkens back to late 19th, early 20th century styles of rigged elections, and that simply would not be feasible now. Now, that isn't to say that you can't have efforts to manipulate voting processes to suppress voter turnout or participation in one jurisdiction or another in order to kind of marginally affect the election outcome, but that's a far cry from what Donald Trump is alleging. Typically now, in terms of what research would support, if you're going to find voter fraud, it's going to be much more characteristic of absentee ballots where the voting occurs outside the purview of election officials and not this sort of thing where somebody's going to come in with 20 different fake IDs and vote 20 times. That's just silly.
That just has not happened in recent decades. People talk about it a lot, but nobody has ever found substantive proof where it has happened on a wide-scale, organized basis.
And Dr. Green, I'm just curious, and maybe going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, but I was wondering if there were any specific examples from earlier times in history you could think of where something like that had happened.
Well, in much earlier periods of American history where you can actually have ballots simply discarded, mm-hmm. I mean, that sort of thing, and there's so little in the way of actual oversight, administrative oversight or scrutiny of election procedures that sort of thing is facilitated. Yeah, there are earlier instances in American history, but again, we have to go back decades and decades ago to find anything even remotely resembling that. And there is simply nothing in recent decades. I'm saying this in reference to various types of rigorous research projects, official investigations and the like. There's simply no evidence that this has occurred in recent decades and nothing that would suggest that this would be feasible in the contemporary political environment.
Mm-hmm. And, can I just throw in something?
Absolutely.
There is a book, and it was written about 10 years ago by a guy who's a consultant who did time in jail. The title of the book is How to Rig an Election, which he did on a very small scale. It was city or county elections. But this was like 20, 25 years ago. Small scale, yes, he said you can do it, but to talk about rigging, people have interviewed him very recently, and in terms of rigging a presidential election with all the electronic systems and the safeguards that are in place now, he said it cannot be done.
Right. Jennifer Edwards, you've been supervisor of elections in Collier County now since 2000, a memorable election in the country and particularly here in Florida. And, you know, we'll touch on that election a little later. But first, I wanted to ask you, you know, when you heard these allegations of a rigged election, you know, what are your thoughts as, you know, a person who's really got all the responsibility on their shoulder of concerning the integrity of the system for all of Collier County?
Well, first statement is it's really an insult to election administrators all across the country because we work as hard as we can to do everything we can. We borrow best practices from everybody that we respect, and we do all we can to ensure and to conduct accurate and fair elections. And I think the first thing that I would like to state for everybody is that Florida law states that we shall not, that the supervisor of elections shall not have their voting system software connected to the internet. So we have a secure room at our administration center, and that's where the voting system software resides. And as a matter of fact, only six people have key access to that room, and that's our four IT staff members, myself and my chief deputy, Melissa Blazier. We are very concerned about security, and we heed every precaution we can. And I can go forth with a litany of things that we do, from things like a security card, picking up our voter ballots every day at the end of early voting in our nine locations, to the robust seal and serial number chain of custody system we have in place. So we're very aware of how important having a very high level of security for everything we do during an election process.
And Jennifer Edwards, with the election less than a week away and tens of thousands of early votes already cast, can you take us through how Collier County tests and secures the equipment used in voting? You know, you already mentioned it's not actually connected to the internet and the, you know, talked about the security measures there. But tell us about the day-to-day precautions and other steps that you would take to ensure the ballots and tallies aren't compromised.
Well, there is also a state law that says the supervisor of elections shall conduct a logic and accuracy test not more than 10 days before the beginning of early voting. And what that means is we have already programmed our tabulation equipment. We've programmed the election. And when I say program the election, of course, we can't do that until after we have, after qualifying, after we have all of our candidates. And we then our IT staff begin programming. And that means that the entire election is created, and that includes the ballot styles, and that also includes the tabulation. So that test is conducted at a public meeting, an advertised public meeting. And in Collier, we have representatives from the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, as well as the League of Women Voters attend that public test. And basically what we do is everything's programmed for the election, and we actually, or our IT staff, creates a predetermined result for every race and all the different ways a ballot can be voted. And then we actually have the members of the canvassing board, which is something you may want to talk about also in the show. But that's made up of a county judge, a county commissioner, or a resident of the community who's selected by the chief judge of the circuit and the supervisor of elections. And we publicly test the equipment. We literally walk through our operations center, and we randomly select equipment that's going to be used in early voting as well as on election day. And we test that at the public meeting, and then we determine that the results, and we even modem the results in like we do on election night, and we determine that the tabulation equipment is programmed accurately because it will tabulate the predetermined results. So that's one of the first steps in demonstrating the accuracy and the security of the equipment.
And Jennifer Edwards, you know, let's focus on how Floridians cast their ballots. You know, votes in our state ultimately end up on a paper ballot, and computers enter into the equation during counting and sorting. But it wasn't always this way. Many may remember the hanging chads of the punch card ballots and touch screens in the ballot box some years ago. Can you, you know, walk us through how the ballots in Florida have changed over the years, starting with those punch card ballots?
Well, as you mentioned earlier in the show, the 2000 election was my first election. I did not work in the office prior to that. And we in Collier had the punch card system. Now, it's my understanding that that system was used in Collier for about 20 years. And the after the 2000 election, of course, the state legislature made sweeping changes in Florida election law. And one of those was to decertify the punch card voting system in Florida. And there was over a dozen of the counties that had that system at the time. So I'll add, too, that before a supervisor of elections in Florida can purchase a voting system, it must go through rigorous testing by the Florida Division of Elections. So we can't just willy-nilly go out and buy anything we want. We can only buy, and right now there are only two systems, vendors that have passed those tests. And so in 2002 in Florida, the 2002 election, any of us who were using punch cards had to have a new system in place. In Collier, we purchased the ES&S, or election system and software voting system, and we purchased at that time all touchscreen, or they're called DRE voting equipment, and implemented that countywide. And then there was a lot of controversy throughout the state, and just some people that just didn't, flat out didn't trust that, and they wanted a paper trail. So the legislature and the governor, this was in 2008 during Governor Chris' governorship, he helped pass a bill that decertified the use of the touchscreen. And we went to the paper system that we have today, which is filling in the oval for your choice. And at that time, we actually received some flow through federal funds from the federal government through the Division of Elections to help the counties fund that. But I remember in Collier, our taxpayers spent about $1.2 million at that point to replace the touchscreen system with the system we use now. We can still use the software that we implemented in 2002. However, we were required to no longer use the DRE or touchscreen machine for the voting, and we implemented what we use today, which is scanners that tabulate the ballot when the voter inserts the ballot into the scanner at the polling location.
All right. Well, let's take a phone call now from Anastasio calling us from Collier County. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Anastasio. Yep. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening. My question is, Donald Trump, he didn't talk about the election can be damaged for some pro. I don't think nobody, as a Democrat, had an interest, because our interest, a Democrat, is to vote, go out there and vote, and he don't have no chance. But I would like to know what kind of protection we, the Spanish people, the black people, we're going to have here in Collier County. We're going to vote early, and we're going to vote as a Democrat as we are. I would like to see what kind of protection we're going to have about our vote, because he don't have no chance for us out here. It's a whole thing, I would like to say. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And we'll take your, invite you to take your response on the radio. Jennifer Edwards, can you, I don't know if you were able to hear Anastasio too well there, but I would just want to emphasize that from a supervisor of elections position, I'm certain that, you know, the way you protect the integrity of ballots, you know, it makes no difference what someone's registered party is.
Oh, absolutely not. We don't, for us, conducting an election is like a production line. It's our job, it's our responsibility. And we do not look at the party of the voter. We just want to provide the best service we can. And we want to secure the election in the best way that we can. And we have policies and procedures in place that will do that. Now, if you'd like for me to talk about how we secure the equipment or how we secure the ballots that are returned from early voting, how we, on election night, for example, at the end of the day, when the polls close on election day, our election staff is trained. They literally modem the results on a landline. We have our own landline installed at each of our polling locations. And that information is sent at the end of the voting on election day. And it's the data is encrypted and sent over the landline. And while that is occurring, also, our election workers are printing a report. It's called the totals page. In the morning when they open the precinct, they print what's called a zeros page from each of those scanners to ensure that there are no votes on them. So we have the zeros page, and then at the end of the day, they print the totals page. And it reflects the total ballots cast, as well as the totals for the candidates. So we vote them at the end of the night on election day. And all that information then is brought to our office. And on Wednesday morning, after the election, one of the first things our IT staff does is they begin comparing those totals tapes to what was modem to ensure the accuracy and the integrity of what was modem to our office. And please know that on election night, those are not official results. Those are called preliminary results. Mm-hmm. And we are required all across our state to send to the Division of Elections and post on our website by 7:30 the results of early voting as well as vote by mail voting. And then every 45 minutes after that, we are required to update our results based on what's modem to us from our polling locations. But those are the preliminary results. And then after 2 days, people who vote provisional ballots at the polling location have the opportunity to bring to us their ID and information if there's a question about their eligibility for us to count that ballot. They have 2 days to bring that information to us. And so on Friday in Collier County, after the election, we hold another public meeting. Our canvassing board conducts the meeting, and at that time we review the provisional ballots, and then we increase the total of the results from Tuesday night with the results of the provisional ballots. And there we are beginning to look at unofficial results. So it's about 10 days before we actually have official results from our election. And then there's a board, the governor and his cabinet, that is the election commission in Tallahassee, will certify the official results several days after election day.
Yeah, so quite an involved process, lots of checks and balances. Roger and Betty, I wanted to ask, you know, we've been seeing polls indicating historically high levels of, negative impressions for voters for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I was just wondering if you think that perhaps the general unpopularity and distrust that people tend to have for these candidates, coupled just with the volatility of this election cycle, might be playing into voters' likelihood of readily accepting the idea that the election itself could be rigged or otherwise compromised, even without any evidence.
I think clearly so. I mean, I think even without some of the recent events, this likely would have been happening. But some of the rhetoric and then recent events have just heightened the likelihood of that. I don't think there's any question but that sort of controversy is going to follow the completion of this presidential election, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I mean, everything in this election has been far beyond the norms, as people like to say, and everything is much more emotional, and people are much more wound up than they've ever been in the past about every aspect of it. So, yeah.
Well, and CNN recently.
May I make a comment? Excuse me, this is Jennifer.
Sure.
May I make another comment about the security? And I believe Dr. Green touched on this earlier. Please remember that, in Florida, there's 67 counties. We all manage our own elections. We conduct our own elections. Across the United States, there are over 8,000 jurisdictions similar to us, and we all manage our processes and procedures. So, point being, it's all decentralized.
Yes. Right.
And it would have to require a huge number of people in a conspiracy. And when you get a lot of people involved in something like that, usually somebody begins to leak information. But that's one of the added, as well as the paper ballot as a foundation, the fact that we're decentralized.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there because we are at the end of the hour, but thank you so much for speaking with us. We've been speaking with Jennifer Edwards, Collier County's Supervisor of Elections. Really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, especially on one of the busiest weeks of the year for you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Don't forget to vote, y'all.
Also, thanks to political columnist Betty Parker for sharing your insights on the election. You can read her coverage of state politics in her column Parker on Politics in Saturday editions of the News Press. Always good to speak with you, Betty.
Thanks, John.
And also thanks to FGCU political science professor Dr. Roger Green for being with us today. Always a pleasure.
Always good to be here, John.
The conversation for Gulf Coast Live doesn't end here. You can keep it going online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui, AJ Leonard, Tara Callaghan, and Matthew Smith. I'm John Davis for Gulf Coast Live. This is WGCU-FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.